Hi, everybody. My name's Adina. I'm an alcoholic. Those of you, and there's about three in here that know me, know that I'm alcoholic. We're hoping that's what it is anyway. I really want to thank the committee, but especially Dirk for asking me to speak. It was probably 6 months ago, and my life was kind of starting to spiral out a little bit. I thought, you know, by the time I speak, I'll have it back together, and I'll be powerful, and it just didn't work out that way. It really didn't. And I watched the power of this program this morning. Like, if I didn't think that God was still working in my life, when I walked into that women's meeting and said the truth, it happened. Like, there was no denying it. Every time I submit myself to the principles of this program, it happens. So why I can't keep submitting consistently is my alcoholism, I think. I mean, that's just me. Like, here's the answer. When I do it, my life is smooth. Everything's good. Nobody's mad. The train does not derail. And then I go, well, you know what, though? It's a little bit too much like this. So I'm going to have a little bit of give in it. And a long time ago, in a land far away, when I first met Dirk, I was going 100 miles an hour in this program. And I was telling it today, the reason I did that, well, I was getting results from it. I like results, and I like them like this. It's got to be quick for me. I wanted people to like me. I wanted to be popular. So I figured if I could just do a lot of service work, I'd get my name out there, and I'd be a big AA speaker because I knew I had the material for it. I had like 30 minutes of recovery and a lot of wreckage. And I'm only allowed to mention Dirk like one time, so I'm going to make it real quick in this whole thing. So I had about a year sobriety, and his sponsor was my old-timer at my home group. And I had gotten myself on a roundup committee. Very interesting one, the way it started. But I did not like the two people that were picking the speakers. They were a little power couple, and I just didn't like that. I didn't like the way it was running. And I mean, really, I knew better. And I believed it. That's the scary part. I believed it. And so I said, you know, I just don't think. And Dirk looked at me, and he said, you're not even sober enough to be on this roundup committee. Oh, my God. At a year, that's offensive, right? I mean, like, that makes me cry and leave a meeting. And so I just went to the old-timer, and I remembered it was raining that night, and it was a crossroad. I'm like, I'm going to drink. So I told him, you need to go do something with him because he's being mean to me. And I'll never, you know, I remember the way he handled that. But here's the deal. I can either be mad and drink, or go, you know what, I got to figure out what the spiritual principles are to put up with people like that. Because there's been a million Dirks since then, and there still are. Oh, I got this little chick at work rolling back in. She was my student. I teach military. She was one of my kids. Now she's a coworker. She went to the boss the other day and said, I just don't think the civilian needs to be teaching this class. Now, she had been at our job 1 week. And that was me in AA with 1 week. I know better. She believes it. And so, y'all, it hit me at a place like it would have hit me at a year. I'm like, excuse me, you don't know who you're dealing with. I mean, I almost said those words, you know, and then I reeled it back in because that's what the program's done for me. It's helping me be a member of society. Now, I'm going to share my experience so I get to say what's happened to me and how I feel about this. I'm going to give y'all a pearl of my wisdom. If it doesn't belong to you, don't take it. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. If it belongs to somebody else, it's somebody else's. That's whether you're drunk or sober. So I need to just, that's a pearl of wisdom. If you do that, it's not good for your sobriety. My sobriety date is December 28th, 1991. So you would think that I would be sharing this beautiful spiritual thing. And 10 years ago, it would have sounded that way. But what happened is I started coasting. And for me, the darkness of alcoholism started coming back. And when it did, my language started changing. The people I started hanging around with started changing. The number of meetings I went to started to change. And I appreciate one of my old-timers here. He said something today, and I'm like, that's it. I started appearing at meetings, you know, as like a guest person. Like, hey, there's Adina. Oh, hey. Right at the last minute, give my pearls of wisdom, which were starting to become very tarnished. I was having to remember what it used to be like. Do you know that when you're like trying to go, oh, yeah, and then I did this. If it's not current, there's a problem. I will not lie to you tonight. I will tell you exactly where I'm at. But the beautiful part is God is not done with me yet. I'm not drinking, and there's hope. But I am at bankrupt again. I'm pretty much at the ground zero level. And that's a good place if you like confusion, fear, panic. You know, and it feels like I've been sober about a week. So I was born to these two little drinking, fighting parents. God love them. In Athens, Alabama. Here's what I remember, to skip on through all that. I remember a lot of fighting, glass breaking, cussing, smoking, and drinking. I remember a rage inside myself as a little kid. But there was two sides of me. There was the please notice me, love me, and then it would flip over to rage. I mean, it was scary before you ever drank to be mean. I'm like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I stabbed my parents' cigarettes one time with an ice pick. That's what crazy people do, because I didn't want them to smoke. So when they came home, they said, did you stab our cigarettes with an ice pick? No, no. And I poured out their miniatures. We had a little, y'all were, some of you older people remember, they would have Christmas stockings. They would sell them with miniatures. Well, that's the kind of family I grew up. You know, what are you getting? You're getting a stocking full of miniatures, you know. So I was mad. See, I've always been like a little, I don't like passive-aggressive people. I'm aggressive. Like, if you don't like something, you tell me and we'll fight it out. But I was really like that because I poured all their alcohol out. Put them bottles right back in there. Did you pour our... No. I was about 11. They called the police. They had a police report on that. Now, they're going to find those cigarettes and alcohol. So, you know, their lives revolved around it. And our lives, my sister and I, she's 9 years older. So, and come to find out, I found this out when I was 38 and had my second kid in Germany. That's not my real sister. We're half sisters. Then it all started making sense. I'm like, because she's the good one. And then there I was. And I kept thinking, how did we come out of the same womb? But see, I was the parents' real kid. So they gave me everything. They never looked at me, but they bought me stuff all the time. So I was ruined. Just selfish, self-centered. If something got broken, they bought a new one. So that's just the way I thought it was. But I didn't feel like I wanted to fit in. And I have a picture, y'all, of when I was 7 years old in our neighborhood. And there was a semicircle of children. And then there was me in the middle. And I was directing them. Like, I had to be the center, the director, the one that everybody liked the most, or the panic took over. And I'm not lying. Panic that you were going to leave and go with them. Like, I had to be your best friend. And there's still some of that. Even in sobriety, once I hook into somebody, I'm like, no, you're my best friend. Don't do that. And it's this fear that, you know, I'm not okay. That God isn't, that I'm going to be left alone. And that feeling of uncomfortableness, I didn't know what to do with it. So I started overachieving well before I took a drink. I was the math winner. I was the this winner and the that winner and the had to be. It was like I was going to die if I didn't win, because that's all that I had that proved that I'm okay. And so lo and behold, when I took my first drink, hallelujah, it was at band camp. You know, that old band camp thing. And the kid that sold me my first bottle of Boone's Farm, Dirk tried to help him get sober. Now, this is interesting because this, I think he's still alive because he came back in about 2 years ago. But there is no telling how much I paid for that bottle of alcohol because I knew that there was something in that bottle because I watched my parents. And y'all, I drank that entire bottle in the shower, that sounds gross, at band camp because it was mine and I wanted, I did not share. And I felt it. And it was over after that point. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that when I did it, I became a little bit Because see, that's the other thing. I might as well cover that real quick. I got two kids. One's 16, one's 38. Two squared is how many husbands I've had. But that really ain't got nothing to do with it. I could have had a million, to tell you the truth, because I can run through men like nobody's business. Because I thought, I truly believed that the problem in my life was I hadn't found the right man. And I believed that to the gates of hell because I brought that right into sobriety. I married a Canadian that I met on an AA cruise. Boy meets girl. It wasn't AA campus, but it was an AA cruise. I had a sponsor with me. And do you know that she saw our eyes lock on day one and she said no. She was an older lady. She said, Diener, now Diener, listen, no. And I promise you, this is a true story. I was probably 10 years sober. By the end of that cruise, we had already decided who would move. You don't think that's alcoholic or something. It's something messed up. Because see, what I wanted to do was create a lot of emotion. I like intensity. I really do. I'm still not where I, you know, everybody I've talked to this weekend said, I hate drama. And I'm like, well, maybe once I get back on the spiritual path, I'm going to hate drama. But I'm still a little bit up in that right now. So, but, you know, I wanted something to make me feel better, really. And it made me feel like I belonged. And so I kept saying to God, you know, I want a husband who's going to put his arm around me at church, and we're going to be this good little family, and I'm going to wash clothes and do all this stuff. And I don't know if y'all know Joyce Meyer, but she is truly me in a bigger person body. She's like, I can't sew. I can't cook. And all my life I've been like, what's wrong with me? I'm not a real woman because I hate cooking, and I tried to sew one time, and you know what I did? I missed 2 weeks of school so they would help me do it, and I got an A on the dress. I kept that dress for 25 years because I sewed that thing, kind of. I cheated. Yeah, I got somebody to do it for me. But inside, there was always this feeling of once I find him, I will be whole. And so that's that. Even that would have been okay. But I would find something that kind of maybe worked a little bit. And I would say, okay, they've got the job. A good job. I can make this work. I can work them out. I can put them on a treadmill, get them in that shape, or send them back to school. Or because, see, it really wasn't about a relationship with somebody. Because if it had been about that, I would have had to have been present. And for somebody who's got alcoholism, well, this person, I don't know about y'all, for me, it's scary to be present. Like, that's intimate to me to, like, even when I share, like, with women, it's so intimate to bear who you really are, because at the bottom of that is, I'm not okay. And once I share with you, and that was a miracle this morning before it got funny, I was so distraught. I'm like, listen, y'all, I'm sorry, but I'm your speaker. I mean, I hate it for all of y'all, and I hate it for Dirk, but this is where I'm at in my life. And it was like they were there, you know. And every time I tell the truth, there's somebody that goes, I'm there. I've had it happen every AA meeting I've ever been at. When I tell my truth, which makes me blush, because it's embarrassing to not be more sober than I am, because I like to look good. I can tell you that right now. I love everybody loving me. But I'm at the point now, it's not funny anymore. You don't get points for showing up and looking good. I'm dying inside, and I want to find that thing, that wellspring of spirituality that says I can stand alone. I'm here to serve others, not to find me a dumb man, no offense. But, I mean, seriously, I've tried just about every brand possible except what we talked about earlier. Maybe that's what it is. Okay, I won't go there. You know, every year that I speak, I go, maybe it was that kind of man. And so, you know what happened about 18 years ago after I'd been beat around in AA for a while? And, you know, at least, let me tell you what happened. When I first got sober, this great guy in Huntsville, who now my friends said, they're like, you dated him? I'm like, really? I can't say. And I'm like, listen, he saved my life. You know, you don't look at him as a hip, slick, and cool guy, nor did I. You know why I dated him? Everybody loved him. He had the real deal. And you know what he did? And he was probably so sick because he picked me, but I was cute. He saved me from being a hoe in AA. Y'all, I love him for doing that for me. I love the people that pull me aside and go, don't do this to yourself, sweetheart. You don't have to hurt like I did. You don't have to embarrass yourself anymore. You can have integrity. And he kind of kept me till I could get some sanity from running through the rooms of AA and wreaking more havoc. Because there's people in here that are hanging on by a thread. They're probably not anybody in here. But I promise you, I've been one of those people where I was begging God before I walked in the meeting, please let there be something in this meeting. And that was 20-plus years. But I've never walked in better than I was. I've never, ever tried to act better than I was. You know, the act as if, I get that part. But I can't come in like I can't lie from the podium. Because then I'm afraid that the magic will stop. And the night that I walked into AA was the best night of my entire life. It was better than the day my kids were born. I'm going to be honest with you. Because I knew there was something wrong. I'm like, I'm a good person. Like, I try hard, and this group of people loves me. But then I take a drink. And this guy that I'm with, he loves me for 30 minutes. And then the demon takes over. And I'm going to tell y'all something. If you don't think I got some energy, you add alcohol to this, and it's so ugly. It's like a beast comes out of me. I was telling somebody yesterday, I remember the day the police had to hold me down in front of my husband and my mother that lived across the street and our toddler because I was in such a rage they wouldn't give me the car keys. I was blind running drunk. I wasn't doing any drugs. I can't imagine nowadays, you know, when you're doing those drugs that hype you up and that kind of thing. It was just pure rage, and I hated myself. I hated who I was, but I didn't know how to get out. And to me, that's the scary part. When we say because I'm so like, I didn't go to treatment. So I'm still holding my 28 days. I'm going to do it for some other mental crazy reason probably, but I've never been to treatment. So I've never said, am I getting sober? You know, let's do the sick and suffering thing. And tonight I'm like, oh God, thank you for saying that because I'm sick and suffering. So I appreciated it. I beg God tonight, give me serenity. This means something when you're hurting. When you're in overdrive, it's good. It's like, I'm in AA, I'm good, I'm sober. And then your life starts spinning, and then it becomes real. I'm powerless. What does that mean? So today when I was jogging, I'm like, God, I'm so powerless. How did I end up here? At almost 25 years, feeling like I can't wipe my own butt. You know, I was married to the nicest, kindest man for 18 years. He supported me. He allowed me to do a million mission trips, go to a million meetings, sponsor a million people. Believe it or not, I've given it away when I had it. But you know, 18 years ago, I was looking for a fix. I said, you know what? I can make this work. He's stable. He makes good money. He'll have a baby with me. He'll never cheat on me. That is selfish. I mean, it was all selfish, and it was all fear-based. And so I finally got so miserable. It's like drinking. I felt so dishonest in AA that I was just trudging and living and not filled with the sunlight of the Spirit, that I released that good man. I mean, that's the best I could do, was say, you know what? You're the good one, and you need to go find a good one, and I need to find me, because for 54 years, I've been running. It's scary. I mean, there's got to be somebody out there that knows exactly what I'm talking about, because I thought I was pretty darn good and sober, because I was going to 1,000 AA meetings. I was sponsoring people, and I was saying it. I was working the steps, and I didn't drink. That's what it promised me. In the beginning, you're not even going to have to drink. And you know, today I feel empty, but I didn't have to drink. I didn't even want to drink. So I was walking down that path today, and I was like, oh my God, I'm sober. I am still sober. Please, God, help me to transmit the message that if I'll submit myself to these spiritual principles, there's no telling what's going to happen the last 54 years of my life. Because I know people in here that have been through some painful stuff. My friends that have been sick to the point where I visited them and I left in tears and figured I'd never see them again. And they kept trudging. They kept giving. And so people are watching. They're watching us. And in the last year, I've just pulled it all back because I was so ashamed and so, which is the worst thing. You know, when you're sick, it's like saying, I'm really sick, I'm not going to the doctor. Now, I'm not going to go in there and possibly give my sickness to the people in the waiting room. So I'm just going to be over here and hope I get better by watching TV and doing crazy stuff. I shouldn't be doing it. And somehow this is all magically going to work out spiritually. And back 25 years ago when I wanted to be a big AA speaker, and believe me, I would have sold my kid to be an AA speaker back in the day. But today, I thought, this is how awful I was this week. God, I hope I get sick. Like, I hope I get the flu. I truly hope I just like get in the hospital sick so Dirk won't be mad at me. Because I don't have anything, and they're going to see it. But I do have something. I've got hope to this program. I've got experience that says if you show up, there's going to be people that say, you know what, girl, you sick. Because believe me, the women in the room were like, oh, my God, like, you're the speaker. And I kind of just like, and I'm like, I know. And see, normally what that does is that would spin me out. I would have went to my friend in the back, I would have went to every one of y'all today and tried to kind of debrief you on why I did that and how you should like me. Really, that's who I am. Like, hey, that was all a big mistake. I was just kind of off this morning. I'm really good. And I'm at the point where I'm like this. I'm broken. So all the haters in my life, believe me, there's plenty. Because I went from rags to riches in this program. And not everybody loves you. That was hard for me, that I could be me and there might be some people that don't like my personality. There's been like two that I met here. And I mean, I teach all the time. No, I teach. And because I'm still like fear-based, I like assess everybody. I'm like, he don't like me, she don't like me. And so I target those people, right? Because I got to have everybody, because that's the only thing I've got. And I was told today, you know, maybe you might want to just abandon all that since you're already broken. It's a beautiful place to be because now I can just go, yep, here I am. I'm living in a two-bedroom apartment, just moved out of my big house with my rich people bathtub. I'm in a poor people bathtub. At least I have a bathtub. Paying what a mortgage will cost. I mean, seriously, I'm 54 years old and I just moved back in an apartment. I never thought I'd live in an apartment. But I put a lot of stuff, you know, deal into what you look like, how much money you make. That don't mean nothing. Because at the end of the day, you know what matters? That you're connected to a power that's going to sustain you. That's what matters. And you can look around and you're broken and pitiful and bumbling like I've been all day. Like, let's not dirt something out. Dana, listen. This is a calm roundup. You're going to have to chill. You know, I'm like, all right, God, please let me chill. But to feel like somebody in this thing likes me the way I really am, not my stage character, because I am the actor. I love teaching because I get to get up and run this show all day long. I teach at 2 colleges, the Army all day long. I'm an Uber driver, and I'm renting out my apartment on Airbnb because I'm divorced now, and I got to make sure I color my hair. No lie. Because in the 7th grade, this is no lie. Some of y'all won't even know who this is. I look like Danny Bonaducci. I keep a picture of myself at work so I can show my soldiers. Do y'all want to know why I'm insecure? This is what I look like in middle school. So every year, I've gotten better looking. And I'm standing up here knowing it don't matter because I'm crazy. You can look good and still be crazy. But here's the deal. I got a good heart, and I want to be sober. And Charlie told me this. He said, Adina, when your butt's on fire, redouble your efforts. He said, I pull back from the program. And it's a miracle to me people stay sober as long as we do. Because the odds are life's going to come in and tell you that it's looking pretty good out there. I got a big family now. I got making a lot of money. You know, let the new people do it. Y'all would be, oh my God, every meeting. I'm like, no, I've already done that. Let them do it. I'm a guest here today. I'm a teacher at the university. Now let me tell y'all, I quit school at 16 years old, pregnant. If you don't think, like I was already ashamed of myself, but as soon as I started drinking, here we go. First boyfriend, first time. I was babysitting for a doctor. We just roll right on up there to the bedroom, and I'm pregnant. Not the doctor. My long-haired husband-to-be. We knew each other 2 months. My last husband that I was married to, 18 years, you know how long we knew each other before we got married? 2 months. Alcoholics Anonymous works. It couldn't make it everything it needed to be. But you can't live with an alcoholic, crazy woman for 18 years if she's not working some kind of program. I'm telling you. When I took that drink, I felt like a hussy. I mean, a good hussy. Like, I'm like, oh, my God, this is so great. I'm going to start clubbing. Now, I've got a baby. That's the problem. Like, this just happened, and now I'm like, okay, well, okay, I'll figure this out. See, I'm always plan B, and okay, I got this baby, had no maternal instinct except, you know, like what people would think, and that's hard to admit. You know, we're talking about guilt today. It's hard to admit how closed off I was, how that I could have this beautiful little thing and just say, can you keep him? Can you keep him? That's what alcoholism does to me. Can anybody keep this baby? Because that's pretty much where I was at. I left him with the neighbors. It gets worse. By the end of my drinking, okay, finally I got out of husband number one because I was so violent. Oh, my God, I'm a violent drinker. After I got rid of him, I'm off to the races. Now, I quit school, got my GED. Was a straight-A student. In my mind, I was brilliant. So it was this redneck. It's everybody else's fault. Every time something happens, it's his fault that I am now a GED person. So if I can just get rid of the redneck husband, I can move on out there and find me a businessman. So I went to work at the Arsenal, which is a miracle of God blessing me early on. Y'all, I was drunk all the time. My friend's mother said, take a typing test. I didn't even know how to type. I learned how to type in a week. Alcoholics can do anything. after I was sober about 12 years. Oh, the Canadian? I married him, by the way. We went through immigration. And guess who he got to be a sponsor? Right there. You don't think he knows all my stuff? Now, the rumor was that I chased Tom around with a knife. That is not the truth. If I want to cut you, I will. I might have picked one up. Now, this was about 10, 11 years sober, you know. I'm rolling with the knife. But you'd never know it at an AA meeting because, you know, I'm Adina, sponsoring everybody. You know, it's too Jekyll Hyde kind of thing. With that fear inside of, oh, my God, you know, if they know. And so when I got rid of Canadian husband, I have no idea where I was going with that. That's the scary part when the brain just stops working. It was spiritual, though. I can assure you it was a spiritual little pearl I was fixing to drop on y'all. That was, two husbands I had drunk, so you can blame it on you're drunk. But then once you have one in sobriety, then it's harder to explain how it's them. And y'all, Dirk's sponsor, I'll never forget this day. He was talking to me on the phone, and he'd say, Sugar. I wished I could say it like he said it. He'd say, Sugar, I think this is a bad idea. And I remember feeling it in my gut. I didn't even know the Canadian. Oh, my God, y'all, we manufactured this fantasy out of nothing. That is my life. Just find something that kind of looks okay and then dramatize it in my crazy mind, try to make it act right, and then act victimized when it doesn't. You know, that is me. And so the thought of just stopping, trying to stop my pain, it's like not drinking. I'm like, there's no way you cannot drink. You wouldn't have a life if you quit drinking. Nobody cool doesn't drink. I remember telling a guy at work, I said, you have to drink. Only boring people don't drink. And it kept me play, you know, I can do this. I'd get stitches. I was big on getting them stitches. Now, please know this. I would attack large men because I was jealous. And if anybody doesn't know what jealousy is, it's an internal sickness that mostly, unless you're dating a narcissistic cheater, which is about the person. So if you're married to somebody and they're always throwing a hissy fit, it's really not you, it's them. Now getting them to see that is an Al-Anon thing. Well, I didn't mean that. I meant that in a good way. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just one of those Al-Anon principles of, you know, mind your own, let them spin out on their own. You're not going to be my problem kind of a thing. Because when people do that to me, I hate it. They're like, oh, you're not doing that, Adina. I'm tired of your behavior. And as soon as they do it, I feel it. I'm like, ooh, okay, I need to quit that because they're fixing to call the truth on me. But the thought of stopping, it was like, no, okay, so don't marry a Canadian. And y'all, I swear, do you know that we went to Canada and we introduced Cliff Roach in Canada? And by the time Cliff Roach came down to Huntsville, I had done moved the Canadian down to Huntsville, and we introduced him at the Huntsville Roundup. I was like, oh, my God, this is God's will. I feel it. Because we're an AA power couple, you know. Now, this kid that I picked, because I just pick them out of the blue. He had a year. A year. I had about 10. And, yeah, that was a good one. Now, after I got rid of him, which was his, oh, my God, thank God he left. He was smart enough to run. I just moved in a guy who was sponsoring. Little old guy. I dated him for 2 years. Worked for him at the restaurant. I mean, I've not done it like the spiritual giants have done it. But I've always been able to say, okay, God, I made a mistake. Let me get back on the path. Let me get back on the path. And what I've tried to do, what the steps have told me to do, did I hurt somebody? Yeah, I did. How did I hurt them? I'm selfish. I don't even see you. I don't even see you. I've got a plan, and I'm going to make it happen because I'm a tornado. And you know what happens with that? I end up alone. And then I'm pitiful. And then I need something to make me not feel pitiful. And that's how the drink comes in. It looks like it's alcohol, but this whole relationship thing, people go, that's not an okay topic or something. I'm like, really? Because I'm off the beam because I'm trying to get that to make me feel better. And when it doesn't work, I'm going to take a drink. So we need to look about three layers deep at why Adina's not okay. Because Adina's not attached to a higher power. And Adina is trying to be the higher power. And that didn't work drunk. Why do I think that's going to work for me sober? Because now I have a master's degree. And now I am working for the government. Now we've moved to Germany, and I'm staying sober in Germany. Oh, and by the way, now I know where it's going. When old boy left to go back to Canada, so I was jealous. And he was a year sober. He said, why don't you get an effing life? I'll never forget that. I'll never forget it. When you're jealous and insecure and somebody calls you on it, you feel it at a very embarrassing level. So the next day, my email at work said, come out to Redstone Flying Activity and get your pilot's license. I said, okay, brother, I'm going to get an effing life. I'm going to get my pilot's license. So y'all remember that guy that saved me for 2 years, the non-hip, slick, and cool guy? I made him go with me. I said, we're both going. Now, he is so fear-based, y'all. I swear to God, his wife's real strong, and he's still kind of like, ur. And he's like, Adina, don't make me do it. I'm like, we're doing it. We're doing it. He quit. I stayed. I got my pilot's license. Now, y'all, that's scary. I was flying a plane by myself, round trip, all over the place, landing, taking off. I did it. Do you know why? Because I thought that would do it. I thought if I achieve something that out of whack, because I'm not left-brained at all. I'm almost totally right-brained. I'm all emotion, which is scary. I got that pilot's license, and do you know how long that validated me? About a week. I spent a lot of money. It was very scary because the week before I got it, you don't steer a plane. That's not how it works. We had to do a short takeoff. I rev that plane up to take it off, and it starts going like this. And I lost my mind, and I start driving the plane. I'm like, oh, God, oh, my God. And, y'all, here is the telephone pole. And here's what I'm thinking. Oh, my God, they're going to laugh at me. That's all I'm thinking is those guys that are watching this, oh, my God, they're going to laugh at me. I pull that plane back as hard as I could. How it did not stall is a miracle, and I pull right up over that thing. Did I quit that date? No, because I can still hear him. I'm going to show you. I'm going to do it. And y'all, if it was about accomplishments, my resume looks pretty good. The A.W. Moyers in my home group was as country as grits. And I used to sit in there at 90 days sober with a little mini skirt. This is not a mini skirt. It's a pencil skirt. With a mini skirt on. Thinking. Athens Serenity Group is the biggest bunch of rednecks. And this is going to be my lot in life. To go to Friday night meetings with a bunch of old redneck country fat. And it was about another month and A.W. Moyer saved my life. And I love it when I'm sponsoring people. I sponsor Brad's girlfriend for a minute, and she'll see the old-timers come in, and she'll go, oh, my God, he's so nasty. Oh, my God, he drinks from that same cup. I said, girl, if you would shut up and listen to that old codger, he's the smartest guy in the room. He is the smartest guy in the room. Y'all, I'm all over the place, aren't I? Oh, I see it in your little sweet faces. Oh, my God. Here's the other problem. I did not bring up the little watch situation. Where are we? Oh! Okay. Was coming home from Huntsville in a blackout. Hit a car with four teenagers in it. Ran them off the road. When I woke up, the state trooper was screaming at me. And my keen alcoholic mind clicked in, and I started screaming, my neck is broken. Because I thought, I'm going to beat this. I'll go to the hospital. I'll wear this thing out, and I will not get a DUI because I got a security clearance. By this point, I just got my job at the Arsenal. I'm a practicing alcoholic, but I still got a job. Hit on the ambulance driver on the way to the hospital. That is a true, absolute true story because I still believed maybe God's bringing him to me in the ambulance, right? I spoke at Julia Tutwiler Prison one time, and there was no difference between those women and me, none. They got caught, I didn't. I was at the county jail not long ago, no different. They're me sitting there, it's just the grace of God. I got that DUI, it didn't even faze me. All I knew then was, you can't drink and drive. Gotta get you in. Got me another husband out of that one. I went on drinking, y'all, for so long that the exhaustion, I would just be like, God, please let me die. Because every weekend I had hangovers. And by this point, I'm taking pain pills to cut the hangover effect. And I'm waking up, I'm bruised up, I'm stitched up, I'm crazy. And all I know is I got to try again. I had this will to keep going. I had a willpower like you wouldn't believe to keep on drinking. Never a thought of not drinking. And then I went to D.C. and something happened. I hit a bottom. I hated my life. I was flying home. Alcohol was pouring out of my body. I could smell it. And I thought, what is wrong with me? My father had asked me that the day I had that wreck, that my angry alcoholic father, he came over and he said, and I'll never forget, he looked at me and he said, what is wrong with you? And I thought, I don't know. I really don't know what's wrong with me. I don't want to be me. I want to be good. But I can't get there. I had no idea about AA. When I got the DUI, I answered the questions. And it was some guy I dated before. He said, girl, you better change your answers. You're going to have to go to AA. I changed them. I missed AA for 3 more years. But that trip to D.C. killed me. And that night, by some fate, I pulled my Jeep into the AA meeting. I didn't even know it was an AA meeting. It was a bunch of nasty smoking people. And I pulled in. This is how desperate I was. I said, what are you doing here? They said, we have meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why don't you come back at 8 o'clock? And that's where the destiny happened. I never took another drink. And it wasn't circumstance. I had tried a million times not to take a drink. Every time I abused my kid, and it was horrible. I left him in Panama City at the amusement park and went to La Vila when he was 10. I woke up in a blackout in a hotel room with somebody, didn't know where my car was. It's 2:30, and I don't know where my kid is. And I start driving. This is back in the day in Panama City. He had walked about 5 miles as a 10-year-old back to that little tiny hotel and gotten the manager to let him in. That's alcoholism. You think I was proud of that? So we will not regret the past. I was like, how's that going to happen? And the day I walked in, I felt something I'd never felt in my life. And y'all, I grasp it like breathing new air. And I went after it like nobody's business. I really did. I probably did it wrong, but I did it. If they said do it, I did it. I didn't have that rogue, you know, I'll do what I want to do until 2 weeks. And that's when I was supposed to fly back and visit some guy that had given me a free ticket. And my sponsor said, don't go. And you know what I said? Obviously, you don't know who I am. I'm a cool alcoholic, and I'm going to do it. And I disobeyed, and I got to Washington, D.C., and I realized then, girl, you got to make a choice. Are you going to stay sober, or are you going to go have this way of life? And I made that guy put me right back on a plane and send me right back to Athens, Alabama. And I walked in a meeting, and they clapped. I was like, oh, my God, they clapped. They love me. They probably didn't, but that's all I needed was the joy of living, feeling like I mattered, and that was the beginning. And from that, I did work the steps. I got a sponsor. I got into service work, and my life got really, really good. And before you know it, I had that good husband, and it all equaled out. And today, when I help a new person, even an old person in AA like me that you think has something going on, they may be suffering. When I just sit down and go, tell me about your thing, I'm relieved of the bondage of self, and that's the key for me. I am a very self-centered, horrific person until God enters and I look at you instead of me. That's the key for me. And it's never going to change. And I don't know why I thought the longer I stayed sober, the better I was going to get. But until I surrender and want to help you instead of me, I'm going to be one miserable alcoholic. And y'all, if I could do this again and be like real calm or like weird, bring my little notes up here, I would do it. And I pray to God above that somebody heard something because I'm still in the game. And y'all know I am one crazy alcoholic. So if I can stay in it, as long as you tell the truth, you got to keep telling somebody the truth. Anything is possible. Thank you, Dirk.